Hey there, I'm your host Alexis Newland and you're listening to The Brave Podcast. I am so happy you're tuning in today. Each week, a friend and I get together and talk about what makes them brave. So sit back, relax, grab your favorite cup of coffee or tea, and get ready for some engaging conversation. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of The Brave Podcast. So happy to have you here with me today. It is now July, middle of July, the time of this podcast coming out, which is crazy. This year was going by so slow in the beginning, and now it has picked up. So it's really nice that we have hit the halfway point in July, and hopefully here in Fresno, the halfway point of the super hot weather. Where I live, it gets to about 102 and 103, sometimes 108 or 9 if we're lucky. And so being outside, which is one of my favorite things to do, is very difficult in the summer here. So I am often escaping to the beach. So at the time of this intro that I'm recording, I'm actually headed to Monterey Bay tomorrow. And tomorrow is Wednesday at the time of this. And it is 64 degrees over there. So I'm really looking forward to going to the beach, wearing a hoodie, and sticking my toes in the ocean. Cannot wait. Okay. Enough of that. I hope you guys are doing great. Now on to our podcast guest. So in this interview, you're going to be able to tell that April and I really connected. We initially met for the first time ever through email and found out that her son participates in adaptive sports. And I am a rec therapist, so I take a lot of our kids down to LA area so they can do the Angel City game. So we probably interacted with each other sometime in the past few years and just didn't know it until now. So it was really fun connecting with her. You're going to absolutely love April. Her energy, her personality, just it's like sitting down and talking with an old friend. I barely knew her and I felt like I had known her for years at the end of our conversation. April shares about what it was like having a son, going through like her pharmacy school and her son having cancer before he turned 2. Her story is wonderful. She has a book that's out called No Mess, No Message. It's a really great book about kind of handling the cards that are dealt with you in life and how God can help you with those things. All right, so without further ado, here is my interview with April Jones. So this is Alexis, you're listening to The Brave Podcast, and I have on today Dr. April Jones. So April, tell people who you are and why you're awesome.
Hey, thank you for having me, Alexis. Yeah, so as stated, my name's April. I am the author of No Mess, No Message, Finding Strength in Struggle and Purpose in Pain. And yeah, I am also the founder of the Drifted Drum Company, co-founded with my son, Tyler Jones, cancer survivor, 18-year-old, just sports and creative phenomenon. I'm a proud mom, obviously, as well. And then I am a medical director in oncology for Pfizer. And just, yeah, loving and living life and, you know, sharing my message of how you can turn your biggest battles, your greatest adversities into the thing that propels you forward into greatness.
Awesome. All right. So I've read, and I'm almost halfway done to your book. And so I read, so you met your husband, you guys are high school sweethearts, correct?
Yeah, well, kind of. I don't remember if I said this or not, but he's 3 years older than I am.
Oh, okay.
So I was kind of jailbait, actually. But yeah, we were from the same small town. So, you know, small town, small circles.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we met there. He was 19, I was 16. And I don't think there's been a day since that football game where we connected that we haven't, you know, been together. So.
Wow. How long have you guys been married?
Oh, my goodness. It'll be 20 years in January.
Wow.
Yeah, the big 2-0.
Wow. So early into your marriage, you had some adversity having your son have cancer. Do you mind going into that a little?
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I think for a long time, I kind of had the mindset that it was like this bad thing that happened to us and we were just gonna try to move on, you know, you just try to move on with your life the best that you can. Once you kind of survive the aftermath of cancer, it's really, it's almost like a, like an ongoing trauma. Like, you know, a car accident is like a trauma that happens and then you have like this recovery period.
Yeah.
And I feel like cancer is kind of a trauma that happens over and over every day. And so,
yeah.
It's really like an ongoing trauma or a chronic trauma. And so, and with us, you know, Tyler ended up enduring a disability as well from that. And so it's definitely something that we've had to learn to navigate. But it was my second year of graduate school. I was in pharmacy school at the time, and we were, you know, pretty newly married. Tyler was not even 2 years old yet. And I got pregnant within a month or so after we got married.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah. Unplanned, yes. And we were being careful. Everybody says, oh, you should be more careful. No, we were freaking being careful, okay? Like, sometimes things still happen. And,
yeah.
But I, you know, so I became a mom kind of unplanned, but, you know, he was, and I talk about it pretty candidly in my book. It wasn't something I was necessarily.
It was funny. I laughed at your reaction.
Thank you for laughing.
It was honest.
Misery. I
laughed. It was so, I'm like, this is the most honest response I've seen.
You know, and it's funny, not to get off track or anything, but I almost hesitated. So my oldest son is now, you know, that experience of, you know, this unplanned pregnancy with Tyler, I wasn't much older than he is now. And I kind of hesitated to share it in the book. Like, I've never told him the story that, you know, like, you know, I really wasn't very excited.
Yeah.
That I was pregnant. I think you always picture like, oh, this moment where the mom finds out she's going to have you, and like angels are singing, and it's like the sun is glowing on her face and she's so excited. And that was not the story that I tell. And I was kind of worried it would hurt his feelings or how he would feel about that. But I wanted to, you know, like, my goal in sharing all of the stuff about our cancer journey and about my, you know, my pregnancy or just the mistakes that I've made. And you'll see that more as you continue in my book.
Okay.
That I share about different things where I'm honest about mistakes that I've made or things that have happened that weren't planned, that, you know, were, I guess you could call them bad situations. And I want, you know, I want to help other people learn from that.
Yeah.
And that things do come up. Even when you've done like all the planning and preparation that you can, sometimes things still happen. And do you allow it to completely sabotage, you know, like all the work that you've done or all the momentum that you're making? Or how do you adapt and adjust?
Yeah.
And how do you stay strong and potentially become stronger and also stay positive? And I think that's very important.
Definitely. It definitely is. And so, how did you find out he had cancer? Like, was he showing any signs or?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how we found out. You know, a lot of other moms talk about, when you think about childhood cancer, a lot of times you think about your baby showing a lot of signs and symptoms of being sick.
Okay.
So, you know, bruising easily or being fatigued or flu-like symptoms or just these different, you know, depending on the type of cancer that you have,
uh-huh.
visibly seeing like, you know, this a tumor or something to that effect. But with Tyler, it was different. Like, he was just a completely healthy little boy. Like, he was premature, but he went home from the hospital very quickly. He developed normally, and he was very healthy. And then one day he was playing in the sprinklers and he kind of tripped on it. He's like stepped on it and it, you know, caused an abrasion on his foot and it was kind of swollen. And so a week or so later, I noticed that the bruising and the abrasion is gone, but his foot's still a little puffy. And then like I squeeze on it and there's like, there was a little rock in there. And that just kind of, that was the first, you know, that was, I almost think about it as like the revealing, like the revelation, like of the change to come. Like, there was no going back after that moment.
Yeah.
When I squeezed and I knew something was there. And so after that, you know, I thought, potentially it was just a cyst or something from where he'd hurt his foot. We scheduled, he was due for his shots, so we scheduled an appointment with the physician, and she was very cautious. She was a new mom, and she said, you know, I don't think this is anything serious. I don't know what this is, but, you know, we'll go ahead and schedule an MRI. We'll be as thorough as possible just because you only get one set of feet, and we're not going to mess this up. I mean, he needs these for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it didn't go so well after that, so.
Wow. And so finding out, you're a young mom, how did you cope with all this? Being a young mom, finding out your son has cancer, was there fears that came across your mind? Was there, like, anger towards God, or?
Yeah, there was definitely fear. Absolutely, there was fear. I think cancer is definitely scary regardless of the age that you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think at that age, you're trying to figure out how to be a grown-up. You're trying to figure out, you know, at that point, I was trying to figure out how to be a grown-up, how to be a mom, how to be successful in school to kind of accomplish the goals that I wanted to accomplish. And so it was so left field, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was like, you're just kind of getting through each day and, like, you know, carrying out your plan and, like, your check marks of to-dos every day to, you know, to live life and be successful, and you're just trying to figure out how to do all that, and then you have no idea, like, just no comprehension of how to navigate, like, the new situation. So,
yeah.
You know, you get this cancer diagnosis and you're like, okay, it's almost like, it reminds me of kind of like rolling down a hill.
Okay.
So, like, you know,
yeah.
Like, you just, it's like, okay, I know that I have to go to the hospital and do the tests and figure out what comes next. And so, like, you don't know what the next bump is after the first one that you've hit, but
yeah.
It's like, you're going anyways. Like, there's no stopping. You can't go back the other direction. You're just,
yeah.
You've got to just keep going and see where it lands. And, you know, so I think that was part of it. That you just feel out of control. Like, you know that you have to get through what comes next,
mm-hmm.
but you're not in control of what's coming.
And that's really scary with the, like, disease. And I kind of know some from experience. It's like, you just, there's nothing you can do. And like you said in your book, you can't get mad at cancer. You can't like yell at it, make it stop. It's like, you have no control over it. It's just, it's invaded your body and you're like, okay, I can't live with this. It's got to go. And it's just, it is definitely life altering, and definitely it just takes away a sense of control. And it, for me, when I dealt with it, like, I learned, like, I really had to lean on God at that point. Like, okay, like, God's gonna lead me to good doctors, good treatment. And so it's just, it's a scary place to be, definitely. And so another question I had for you is, looking at your son having it, how do you explain that to a child that young? How did you guys navigate that?
It was interesting. You know, the approach that we kind of took was just to be as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I know this might sound crazy, but, you know, like, being that age and having a baby, he was kind of like my sidekick. Like, I didn't treat him like a baby. Like, I never did baby talk with Tyler. Like, it was like, you know, he went everywhere with me. He was kind of like my buddy. Like,
aww.
We jammed in the car. Like, I remember, you know, like, I remember, Jay-Z being on and Tyler being like, get that dirt off my show, you know, like, didn't even say a dog yet, you know, but he was just, like,
that's amazing.
He was just my sidekick, you know, he's doing everywhere with me, and so, like, you know, it was, we were so close. Like, if you like Spider-Man, I like Spider-Man. Like, you know, it's just,
yeah.
You know, what it was. And I, so this, like, new thing where we're going to the hospital every day and he has to get poked and he has to go through all this stuff and he has to take medicine. Like, I never surprised him. Like, I always said, you know, this is what the doctor's going to do next. You know, I know that you don't understand that, but, you know, your foot is sick. And, like, we need you to be healthy and I want you here a long time with me. And in order for that to happen, like, we have to do these things. And, you know, and I, spent lots of cuddle time with him, and we watched his favorite movies, and we did as much that he enjoyed as possible when he felt like it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think just trying to, you know, I think it was hard because I expected a lot out of him, I think. You know, you expect him to sit through the treatments and to be still and to be good and do all this stuff, but... You know, and I feel a little bit guilty about that. But in all honesty, you know, when I look back, I always wanted him to be verbal about how he was feeling or mm-hmm. to me, you know, maybe not to everyone. But I did try to stay very in tune to, you know, his fears or, you know, what he was thinking.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if he was sad or tired or whatever, like, you know. So, and I think, you know... teaching him how to advocate for himself in a positive way as well. So like later on as then, you know, there wasn't any more cancer, but we're dealing with prosthetics and different mm-hmm. things like that, you know, encouraging, helping him understand that these people are there to help him, but they don't know how to help him unless you speak up for yourself. And I think that's really important. And, you know, and as I think back, as someone who's been in the healthcare field for a while and someone who's been very active and trying to help others, you know, with nonprofits and help others learn how to advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, it is a situation where you feel very powerless, but at the same time, there definitely are things that you can do to kind of have at least a sense of stability in the situation. And
mm-hmm.
I would say one is learning how to have a voice,
okay,
making sure you ask questions, learning as much about your situation and your what options you have, and not worrying about offending anyone in that,
okay,
because no one lives that life but you.
Yeah.
So, like, once you're done with that treatment or whatever happens, like, you have to leave there, and they have other patients or they have other, you know, they have other problems to help fix, but you're left with whatever that solution turned out. So you have to be good with that, and you have to live, you're the one that has to live with that. So learn as much as you can to help make decisions that make you feel at peace.
Okay.
And just a support network, you know, and sometimes that comes from people that you didn't even know before, but just like
exactly.
other people you've related to with similar experiences.
Yeah, exactly. And so he was going through treatment. How was that, like, seeing him sick? How was that affecting you?
Oh, yeah, that was really hard. And I think part of it is, too, that, you know, I didn't really get that long with him.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's different maybe for people where their kids are different ages, or whether it's their spouse or sister or mom or whomever. But, you know, with him, I think I felt a little robbed because we didn't get that normal childhood experience.
Yeah.
It was like he was little. And, you know, we'd only celebrated one birthday by that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so I felt like a lot of the other moms, and I was a little bit resentful, I think, all these other moms that, like, whined about the day-to-day stuff. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, he's so cranky because he's teething. Or, oh, if only potty training could go better. And I was like, what? Like, shut the front door right now, because I'm not listening to this crap, you know? Like, you just have, your reality is so different than
yeah.
everyone else's reality.
Yeah, I can't imagine that reality. And then with cancer, there's always this, like, fear of death. And so, like, I can imagine that was, like, you don't want to think about it, but, like, that was, like, in your mind, like, could I lose my kiddo?
Yeah. So I feel like I was really honest about this, and I know that it might come across as a little morbid, so I was almost hesitant in sharing it.
Yeah.
Or almost like uncaring or something, I don't know, but you know, people are gonna judge us, whatever. So I'm like, think what you want. This book is gonna help somebody, and if it's not you, then that's fine. But honestly, I think it was almost like, you know, like all this pressure, like all this fear and anxiety kind of builds up to a point to where sometimes something has to happen. And I think for me, kind of the eruption was that of that was the moment where I realized that it didn't matter what I did next, that if Tyler lived or all I could do is make the best decisions that I could, try to listen to the doctors, try mm-hmm. to follow directions, do the best that we could do with what we were, with the cards we were dealt. And then at the end of the day, Tyler could respond or he could not respond. And then he might die anyways.
Yeah.
And I had to trust that whatever was going to happen, that, you know, God was going to see us through it. Like, I wasn't there under no circumstances, unless I took my own life, was I going to die at the same time Tyler died, if that yeah. happened. So, like, if that event occurred, I was going to have to figure out how to move on past that.
Yeah.
And that there had to be a reason for that. And I didn't understand why, but other people, I had friends that had lost their kids. And it's a part of life sometimes. And I didn't understand why, and I didn't think that it was fair, but I didn't have control over it. And so I just had to trust God. And I think that way of, like, that fear that I had about that just kind of subsided. And it just kind of released after I came to that realization. And I think that was a turning point for me. And from that point on, I think every situation that I've had, I've approached differently. That you can... one of my best friends, I actually dedicated my book, one of my best friends, Julia, she actually passed away 4 years ago. 4 years ago this month. And so her thing was, she was like one of my, just my, she was like my rock. She was just like my spiritual sister. And she would say, whenever I'd get anxious about something, she would say, okay, like, what's the literal worst that could happen? Like, what are you so afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would, like, explain it out. Like, okay, well, if the worst thing happened, it would be this and this and this. And she's like, okay, so how would we deal with that if that happened? And so, like, it helped me think through, like, what's so bad if I had, like, a plan?
Yeah.
what happened next? And then also in the same context, and is that going to matter a year from now? Is it going to matter 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Like, if that actually happened, like, why, you know? And so I think that kind of, it took power away from the situation.
Huh. Yeah.
And so everything that I'm nervous about or afraid of now, I kind of put that around it to help me kind of analyze it and say, you know, okay, if it's God's plan that this is actually going to happen, then what then?
Yeah.
And it really, really helps me deal so much.
That's a good point. Yeah. To basically, if you're like, okay, what is the worst thing that could happen? And they kind of flesh that out. It does take away a lot of power and a lot of fear from it. I have to remember to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Because fear can really stop you. That's, like, really brilliant. I really like that. If you, like, take it there and be like, okay, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So your son is now okay, but you had to face a hard decision of amputating. And I remember in your book you said, like, you thought of him, the loss of him being able to run. What brought you to that decision to finally amputate, like...
Well, so it was, you know, I think it was essentially closing one chapter and opening another.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, like, I felt like everything that we'd done to that point, the cancer hadn't really responded. So, like, we had maybe a 30% response to the chemotherapy at that point, and we didn't really have a good, clear diagnosis. And, I mean, thankfully, if things have gotten better in that amount of time, you know, genomic testing is available now.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, like, we just didn't, there really weren't a lot of options, and there's still not enough options for childhood cancer, let's be honest. But you know, I think that at that point, the only option that we had, the only therapy that we had was essentially one one type of chemotherapy or one regimen that had been shown to be effective in certain types of fibrosarcoma similar to Tyler's. And, you know, so we gave that a shot, and then we didn't get the effectiveness that we wanted and, mm-hmm. you know, what had been proven in other studies to show to be pretty effective. So at that point, you know, they said, well, we really don't have any other, chemotherapy options to suggest. So, you know, we could potentially, like, take the tumor out again and install radiation rods and do radiation because it's difficult to get a margin
That's
on that area.
Painful.
Yeah, and, you know, it could potentially, like, we could see long-term damage from that. It'd be painful. Mm-hmm. It might damage a growth plate. Like, we might not see, you know, we might cause enough damage that we'd have to amputate later. So, amputation for us was going to, even though it was scary, we didn't really know what that meant after. There were two options. One, you know, I mean, two thoughts around that as being our choice, and that was one, we probably, the incident, if his cancer indeed had not spread at all by that point, then there was a good chance that it wouldn't recur. And then the other is that, you know, if we did all this other stuff with this radiation, like, we would continue to have to deal with this cancer situation and the fear of it coming back and you know, putting him through more stuff. And I just wanted, if possible, to be able to be done with that and deal with the new scenario.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. And yeah, as you know, that has not stopped him from running. So.
Yeah. How did he react the day when he woke up and realized he had his amputation? How was, like, being two, how did he react to that?
It's hard to say, I think. So we were, of course, in the ICU for a couple of days after. And so he was really medicated, I think. And he had the cast on his leg. And so that was heavy. And he knew he couldn't move around. And, you know, so he didn't ask a lot of questions then. But we were very verbal with him, you know, about, you know, like, why he was getting medicine and there's a significant amount of pain after amputation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, our biggest concern was making sure that he was comfortable. And then, you know, like, when you have to, like, he would get shakes from the morphine. And then, so we had to, like, calm that down and, like, figure out a different. And so it was really about pain management mainly after the surgery. And then, you know, I don't remember him being, you know, extremely inconsolable or anything. Like, when we, after we brought him home, like, I asked him lots of questions about how he's feeling and about pain. And, you know, we tried to we stayed with him around the clock. Like, you know, we were watching movies or we were keeping him occupied. And, you know, at two, it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
You know, they want to go, they want to move around and run around. And I just tried to be really sensitive to that and communicate with him honestly.
Wow. So after his amputation, what was the first chance he got to run? Like, got to, like, give it a shot?
Well, you know, he picked up getting around pretty quickly. I guess it wasn't very long after he had his amputation that they put him in a leg. And it was kind of heavy that, you know, I mean, prosthetics have improved a lot as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, then he had to wear, like, this kind of belt thing to hold all of it on. And we still had diapers. And it was not a very good experience. You know, when you look back on it, it was one of those things you think, wow, that was tough. But he weathered it really well because, you know, his main goal being two, he wanted to run around again, you know,
yeah.
He just wanted to get mobile. And, you know, and so he did that at a pretty quick pace, you know, trying to get moving. So kids are just amazingly resilient. Like, they know what they want. They know what they want to do. And they just really don't let anything hold them back.
Yeah. So going through this with Tyler, did this kind of push you towards that direction of being in, like, the oncology field and the medical field? Because I know you were kind of already going that route.
Oh, my God. So it's so funny that you asked that.
Yeah.
Because It's totally the opposite. It is the opposite, ironically. So when I was in college, I thought that all I wanted to do was do research at St. Jude. I wanted to be an oncology researcher and develop drugs to treat cancer. That's what I wanted to do.
Okay.
And so I did a chemistry biology double major.
Wow.
And yeah, I graduated high school early. I did a summer in research at St. Jude. I was actually pregnant with Tyler when I did my research at St. Jude, which is kind of crazy. I was there in structural biology and in the lab, you know, doing like bench work. And it was really cool. And so I knew that I wanted to do like an MD, PharmD, and do research. That's what I wanted to do. So after I had Tyler, I was like, well, PharmD needs to come first because it'll be a little, you know, less demanding with him being small, and I won't have, you know, I won't have as much like after hours
and on call,
on call, exactly. So then of course it was my second year when Tyler got cancer, and I started, you know, I didn't feel it at that point. Like, I definitely wanted it to not be part of my life anymore, you know, just kind of like disconnect, like cancer's bad, I don't want anything to do with it, I'm done with it.
Yes.
You can relate.
Yes.
And so my last year of pharmacy school, in your fourth year you do like these internship type things, like, you know, like clinical experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be sure that I wasn't missing, you know, that I wasn't just making a rash decision, that I'd really thought about this for a long time and that's what I wanted to do. So am I dismissing it too quickly and I'll get over this? Like, am I get out of my feels? Am I just in my feels, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did two rotations in oncology and just really decided that it wasn't for me. One of them actually ended up being in the clinic that, you know, and I, that we had been patients at, and I knew a lot of the patients, and that was really hard for me. So, yeah, it was really difficult. And so I actually went into an administrative path instead. I got my MBA and really enjoyed being in leadership and management, and definitely I was well suited for that. And I actually, a couple of years ago, so I've had pieces of like responsibility when it comes to oncology, but it's never been like my whole job.
Okay.
And then 2 years ago, I took a role in medical affairs, and we kind of went through some changes, and they said, you know, we're moving some people around and you're in oncology now. Congratulations. Like, and it's so funny. I was like, you know, everyone else was so excited, and I know it's a prestigious place to be, and
mm-hmm.
there's so much development, and just so, you know, things are getting better and better, and I'm excited about that. But honestly, like, and you know, I'm always honest. I mean, you've read my book.
Yeah.
And, I was a little bit terrified, but I was, you know, being positive about it. And I said, you know, there has to be a reason I'm here. There's definitely a reason that God has put me in every opportunity that I've had, regardless of how I got there. And I believe there has to be a reason why I'm here. And honestly, I do enjoy it. I mean, to think that, you know, to help educate and to really be a part of that. It's sometimes difficult to go from the science of the black and white and only talk about the clinical, and
mm-hmm.
then in the after hours, a lot of times be an emotional support or talk about the spiritual or the faith component from my personal experience.
Yeah.
But so I think finding the balance in that has been a little bit tiring, I think, emotionally, I think it wears me out a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, I'm definitely, I've been doing this for over a year now, and, I feel so blessed to be in an area to really learn about where the unmet needs are and how we're making progress and connecting to these brilliant people and just working with these people who dedicate their lives to helping other people get better and to help find cures. And I think I'm very grateful to to Pfizer and to other companies who are investing money and time and research with these innovative researchers and healthcare providers that want to, that aren't satisfied with just the standard of care, but really want to see us find cures.
Yes, because it's just, it's such a crazy disease, and it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't matter who you are, sadly, what age you are, what you look, it just, it touches everyone. Like, someone has been affected by this disease in some way. Like, you can ask anybody, and they know someone, or they've had it, or, and it's just, it'd be great the day that we have a cure. Like, it would be amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
For all of it.
It would. Yeah. So after going through all of this, what made you decide to write the book?
Okay. So I actually, so there actually is a story for this.
Okay.
So, I had started journaling. So I had went through like a difficult time and where I just kind of felt, you know, I was in one of those bad situations, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't the worst that I've been through, but you know, it's definitely challenging, and I was trying to kind of figure out like, why do I deal with things the way that I deal with them?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the point where I really started to allow myself to acknowledge that it really was because of this bad thing that happened to us, and it was a kind of a culmination, like, of all of the experience that I'd had up to that point. You know, sometimes you want to change and you just want to forget. You don't want to be the person that you were. And I think that you have to realize, like, it's those experiences that make you who you are. It's
yeah.
how you, because they happen and then you have to react and you have to respond. And you either grow or you regress, but either way, like, it affects who you become. And so I started to journal, and I realized how many feelings I had not dealt with yet.
Okay.
And this, you know, this was several years after, and I really unearthed, and I allowed myself to cry about things I never cried about, to be, you know, like, just to really give myself credit over difficult things that I dealt with that I always just said, well, you know, it's just part of life. Like, I just have to do it. Like, what's my
yeah.
other choice? But to really say, wow, you know, like, you really powered through that. And you just kind of to recognize and self-analyze a little bit. And so I had done some journaling. And then I decided that I might want to make a book. But it wasn't until my friend Angela, her son Wesley, he and Tyler actually were at St. Jude together. So she and I grew up together, like
okay.
in a small town around the corner from each other. And we really didn't know any other kids that had childhood cancer. I think there was one kid that, you know, went to high school with us that had cancer when he was little, but I didn't even know that until like last year. So
oh, wow.
I didn't know anyone. I was really sheltered from this experience. And then I was in the waiting room, and then Angela and her son were in the waiting room, and him and Wesley and Tyler were the same age. And I was like, What are you doing here? And she's like, what are you doing here? And, you know, because we had kind of disconnected when we went to college.
Yeah.
And so he had tumors that were benign, but they were brain tumors. And so he had to have treatments, you know, like to keep everything under control and keep seizures under control. Well, a couple of years ago when Wesley was 16, he ended up having some new onset of symptoms in between his 6-month checkups, and come to find out it was stage 4 glioblastoma.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it just like hit them like a hammer. I mean, it was just completely unexpected. And, you know, so I was there for, you know, for Angela through that kind of process over the next year. And, when it was getting close to time that, you know, Wesley was starting to decline, you know, she's always and still is just very strong and graceful, and but she started having kind of trouble communicating because she was starting to feel a little overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And she was like, how do I deal with this? You know, do I write a blog? Like, I don't want people to feel like I'm shutting everyone out.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I don't know what to say or what to do without falling apart. So I said, you know, let me share with you my journaling that I wrote. Like, I mean, I don't know. I thought about someday writing a book, but I don't know that it'll become a book. It's kind of just my thoughts right now. And maybe it'll just help you see that, you know, these feelings are normal. Maybe it'll just give you something else to focus on. I don't know. I was like, but, you know, if you want to read them, you can read them. So I sent them to her. And she said, she called me a couple of days later, and she was just like, this has to be a book. Like, she was crying. She was like, this will help other people.
Hmm.
So I said, okay, well, for you and only you, I will write a chapter every month and I will send it to you, and then we will see what happens. But I'm going to finish it if this is what you think I should do. And I did that. I did that for the whole rest of the year. Wesley ended up, sadly, he did pass. And so I tell a little bit more of our story and about how she has turned her pain into purpose by forming a foundation in his honor. And I maintained true to my word. I finished the book, and then I started looking at like what my publish, you know, what the options were to publish, and how I wanted to go about it, and all that craziness. And I think, you know, during that process, it gets more tangible and better, and it becomes less of a memoir and more of what it kind of developed into. And I'm really glad that I did it. Like, it's not something I always loved to write when I was younger, and I didn't grow up thinking that I would, you know, Tyler's cancer was a long time ago. I definitely, at the time, didn't say, I'm going to write a book about this. I wanted to forget. I wanted to forget about it. But no, I mean, I have to say, like, if this happened to me, I don't want it to be for nothing.
Yeah.
I want to help other people if I can.
And I love the title, Mess into a Message. And you really can turn, like, some of the worst things. It's a message to someone else. It's a message of hope, of you can do this. It's great. I'm so glad you wrote it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to finish the rest of it. I'm like, I really like this. It's a really good book.
Thank you. I hope it's a page turner. I definitely It is.
I was like reading some. I'm like, I need to go to bed. I have work in the morning. Get it down.
I love that. I was definitely a reader growing up, and I remember, you know, being up until 2 in the morning and thinking, I have 8 o'clock class, but I can't stop reading.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, my mom to punish me with, like, not go to your room, you can't read. Like, you can't read. Just like, she'd put my books away, and I'd be so mad.
Love it.
I love it. Wow. All right. So what are you loving right now? What are some things in your life that are absolutely awesome for you?
Oh, you know what? So this is kind of a crazy time, I think, to ask this question.
I know.
All this quarantine business.
Yeah.
But you know what? I am really loving being able to relish having all three of my boys in the house at the same time still.
Yeah.
Because my oldest is about to go to college. You know, my youngest one is, you know, second grade, third grade. And then I have one right in the, you know, kind of in the middle. He's in high school too. And even in the little moments, like even when they're like yelling at each other on, like, so they get on these online games, you know, and they'll be sitting like in different rooms, and I can hear them, like, they're on the same game and they're like yelling at each other and bossing each other, like, go there, do this, do that. But, you know, just being able to, like, be in their presence and all of them there at the same time, like, I feel so blessed and so lucky that it's even just the smallest things. I'm just feeling so grateful. And, you know, just like afternoon walks, we live kind of on a farm outside of Nashville, and you know, just like afternoon walks and, you know, in the Tennessee spring weather, and just even my husband laughs at me because we have like the wildflowers, like, and he's like, I gotta get the I need to get the tractor out and get rid of all these weeds, and I'm like, they're beautiful. He's like, oh my god, Pollyanna, okay. Aww. Like, I was like, but it's just, you know, I just feel like I'm kind of in this period of my life where I just see God starting to use me and being brave to try new things and share my story. And I love about, you know, like when I was reading about what your podcast about is that, you know, it's brave to share your story, but I'm finding joy in everything and everywhere. Yeah. And I think that's kind of like, I wouldn't say it's new for me, but I think I'm realizing at a more mature level or at a newer level that just really being at peace in my environment. Okay. And it's very, I think it's a special place to be, and I'm loving that so much.
I love that. Oh, yeah, and I love Tennessee. I grew up in Georgia, and so I would go to Tennessee, Chattanooga, Nashville, Pigeon Forge. I was going to move to Tennessee, but then ended up in California, but, like, love Tennessee. It's such a beautiful state. Like, absolutely love
yeah.
it.
Cool. California is not a bad place to be either. I'll definitely love me some California.
But. Yeah, I enjoy it. I like the weather. I remember the first time I saw the ocean, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm never going back to the South. This is yeah. this is awesome.
And there's no winter. Like, it's pretty. That's pretty nice.
Yeah. So you said you're in Nashville. Were you affected by the tornadoes at all?
So they touched down, like, literally maybe 2 miles from our house. Like,
wow.
Yeah. So much devastation. And then, of course, Chattanooga got hit also a week or maybe 2 weeks ago. So
yeah.
they had some pretty major tornadoes, too. And, you know, and that's part of, you know, growing up in the South. I think people, I guess, major cities, you know, definitely the damage is so much more impactful because
yeah.
there's so many more people affected. But, you know, like, I grew up outside of Jackson, Tennessee, and, you know, basically, like, tornado drills were totally a thing that you're just used to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you just, everybody goes in the hall, cover up your head, like, it's
yeah.
totally, like, this normal thing, and I definitely, like, I even had, you know, knew of people. I remember there was a girl in my public speaking class who, you know, came, her arm was broken, and she had this speech, and, she had lost her mom in the tornado. Like, that's how she got injured. Like,
wow.
I was just, you know, I mean, so it definitely, you know, I guess anywhere you live, there's some type of natural disaster
mm-hmm.
that you can, you know, earthquakes or hurricanes or,
yeah.
you know, if there's something wherever you go, I guess. I don't know of a place that there's not something. But if, you know, it's very sad when those hit because, you know, I talk about the different types of adversity
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the challenges really fall in three different categories, and it's the things that you caused yourself,
mm-hmm.
the things that other people do to you is how we see them, or the things that seem to be bad luck or, you know, the things that,
yeah.
you know, who do you blame, you know, Mother Nature, God or whatever. And it, you know, it's really sad to see people impacted, but it's also been a really great opportunity here to see a community come together and really
yeah.
people pour their hearts out and help each other. And I think it's sometimes a reminder, like even in times of loss, that there's still hope and there's still others there for you. Even people that you don't know will sometimes come together to kind of bridge the gap that's been created.
Yeah. All right. And so what are some of your goals for this year?
Ooh. one of my goals is, okay, let me think. One of my goals is definitely to have another no pity party.
Oh, what is that?
Yes. So the no pity party. Okay. So I have to kind of share about, so the Drifted Drum Company is the brand that I published my book under. And also Tyler, my son, has his own kind of has t-shirt line. And like, we have some gifts and things to help encourage other people. So Tyler's kind of an old soul. Like, he definitely is pretty spiritual and really at peace with himself and who
mm-hmm.
he is. And he's that encourager, like, of his friend group. He really tries to encourage others. And so he just kind of wanted to do that on a bigger scale. And we talked about when I was in the process of sharing my book and, you know, writing my book, I wanted to include him because you know, I said, this is your story too. So how do you feel about this? And, you know, I don't share everything about you, but what do you think about this mission kind of that I'm on?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I really want to be a part of it and I want to encourage other people too. So he came up with some design. He worked on his own unique designs with a designer and has his own apparel line, his own t-shirt line.
Wow.
Of images that he feel like kind of speak peace. And several of them have like a reference to a Bible verse that encourages him. And so as we were kind of developing the Drifted Drum Company, one of the things we talked about, what are other ways that we can really help? And I think about some of the key concepts that I talk about in my book and also my experience in helping with different nonprofit initiatives. And one of the things that really speak to me is, well, really three of the things, is community,
yeah,
worship, like definitely like worship music has helped kind of introduce, you know, really, even though I grew up in a Christian environment, worship music really helped me reconnect to God,
mm-hmm,
when I was feeling very separated. And then the fact that like you can turn your bad situation into a good situation and help other people. And I think a lot of people that are involved in nonprofits, especially local nonprofits that are started from scratch, really,
yeah,
you know, they came out of someone else's pain and the,
mm-hmm,
need to fill this hole. And the smaller nonprofits, what they do oftentimes is they pour all their money that they have into their mission, into this initiative. And what happens is that you don't have enough to invest then into your marketing. And so people don't always know about the good that you're doing.
Yeah.
So the no pity party was this concept that I came up with. And I call it that because the last thing you need when you're going through something difficult is a pity party.
Yeah.
You need community. You need to figure out how to find faith again.
Yeah.
And you need to turn your pain into purpose. So that's what I did with the No Pity Party, is that it's an event that highlights. So I had, so my first one was in November on Tyler's birthday in the town that I grew up in. And so we had local nonprofits come and set up booths, kind of like a vendor fair.
Okay.
And then I had live music, so worship music, you know, contemporary Christian.
Yeah.
And intermingled with speakers who are from the community that tell their story of how they turned their difficult situation into their mission for their life and how healing that has been. And so it was an amazing night. I had a little, you know, Tyler shared his story, but my friend Angela that started the Wesley Warrior Foundation, I had a girl who is a beauty queen here. She's in eighth grade, or well, ninth grade now. She's in ninth grade. And she is the kind of the spokesperson, the youth spokesperson for Gia's Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Teen Suicide Prevention.
Okay.
And she told the story of her friend Gia that took her life in sixth grade.
Oh.
So it was just so soulful and just authentic. And so I'm planning one in Jonesboro with the Crucial Conversation podcast guys. And I'm very, very excited. We were supposed to do it this spring, but then with all of the COVID, that's been pushed back. But I'm really looking forward to having another Drifted Drum Company No Pity Party for sure.
That is awesome. I love that idea.
Thank you.
That is such a cool idea. How did you come up with the name Drifted Drum?
So Tyler and I came up with that together. Drifted means that you've ended up somewhere due to external forces.
Okay.
So you didn't plan ending up at that destination. You've kind of been drifted there by,
mm-hmm,
the way, the environment. And then drum being this vessel that can be emptied and filled out over and over again. And I feel like that's who we are. That's how we are. We're not necessarily, you know, in some ways, some parts of our plan has worked out, but like, you know, we really ended up at this place that we really didn't bank on or didn't plan on being, and because of all the things that has happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're able to empty ourselves out, whether that's from being discouraged or being overcome by our circumstances, but we're able to fill up again. And, you know, sometimes we're emptied out because we're pouring into others.
Yeah.
And then we have to refill and renew. but regardless, we're to be used over and over again.
I love that too. That is really cool, because Jirta, I love that you're usually taken somewhere you don't expect, and so that is a really cool name for that. How long has it been around, the Drifted Drum? Did it just start?
In July of last year.
Oh, so it is pretty new. So you're coming up on your 1 year anniversary.
Yes.
That is so cool. Okay.
And I do some newsletters for my website, and my goal is definitely to continue to share other stories of encouragement as well, like not just through the event, but whether that looks like, some other author coaching or helping others publish. I've mentored a few other authors that have been in the process of telling their stories, and I'm really excited to see as their books are kind of coming into fruition of what their final product looks like. But really just helping people like you do be brave to share their story, because it might help someone else. And we are going to be judged, and there are going to be people who say, whatever, it's not that your story's not that special. Everyone deals with hard things, but we know what we had to go through to get to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can help someone through their really low spot or really rough spot, then it's worth it.
It totally is worth it. Stories have power. So I love that you're doing that, and that we're both doing this together. This is so cool.
Yeah.
I wanted to end on, so you mentioned that you use worship music to get back to God. Do you mind sharing that story?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I did grow up in a pretty religious environment, but it really took me a while to figure out that relationship and religion are two different things.
Yes, so different. So different.
And it's actually one of the things I'm asked to speak on the most, interestingly enough. And for me, it has totally been a game changer, because I think that I recognize the importance of religion in terms of, equipping us with knowledge about, the Bible or the rules, in terms of, you can't swallow and absorb the whole Bible at the same time.
No.
So kind of helping you with the guidebook of how you're supposed to kind of get to this better state of being or better person, to be a better person, I guess, to keep you out of temptation in the good. But I think I equated, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, about I didn't understand that being a good person and being close to God were not the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, I felt like I was a good person, I was doing good things or trying to be, at least, do no harm. I was trying to be this productive, responsible grown up. That was my goal. But then when Tyler was sick and we would go to the hospital in the mornings, I really wasn't someone, you heard my Jay-Z story. I really wasn't someone who listened to Christian music. I did. But my mom gave me a CD of Third Day. So
I love them.
And I really didn't know about them at the time. But I would, I put them in the CD player on the way, and something about the music really just helped calm me. I would, was in the back seat with Tyler and, just kind of snuggled to him, and just, I knew that I was preparing for a difficult day.
Yeah.
And just kind of the calmness in the car with the sleeping baby and the music that talked about a God that was loving and powerful, and there's something about it gave me a sense of calmness and just helped me be more at peace. And I think with time, I've really learned the importance of that. Whenever my life tends to start to feel a little scattered or my mind is racy, there are those powerful spiritual worship music that I go to that just helps to center me again and get my focus in a place that's pure and remind me who's really in control of the situation. And and that, you know, it Jeremiah 29:11 I think is my really my anchor that I hold to.
I love that verse.
Yes.
Love that verse.
That his plans are better than my plans. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when things aren't going my way, I have to remember that, you know, that's okay. If it's not going how I planned, then maybe God has a better plan than me, and I just have to trust that.
Yeah.
And know that he does, you know, the just as the verse says, like, it's his plans are not of destruction. They're not of despair to tear us down. Like, his plans are good plans for us, to have a good future. And I think that it helps remind me that maybe I'm losing my grip on trust a little bit, and I have to get back to that.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. That is one of my absolute favorites. And then for me too, worship also helps center me. I know if I'm really anxious or if I'm feeling like irritable and kind of overwhelmed by like my life circumstances, God's like, you should put on some worship music. And I do. And it's just so amazing how like things just seem to like mellow out and just more centered. Like, I feel so much better. And it's terrible. I should do it more often instead of getting so worked up. I should just automatically just put some on because it really helps. It really, really does.
Yes. And I actually, so I've never considered myself a songwriter or an artist at all when it comes to anything music related. I'm not a very good singer, to be honest. And I took piano lessons, but basically I can still only play Ode to Joy.
I know that one, yeah.
And like, maybe one little thing of Beethoven where, like, you know, you only do chords with three fingers on this hand. And
yeah.
Then, like, this hand, the right hand does its thing, and, you know, but it's not anything special. But I felt, you know, like, as I'm kind of on this journey and I have came to the realization that, you know, the Drifted Drum Company and the book, even though I have my MBA, even though I understand business,
mm-hmm.
I've realized that this is not my business. Like, this is a ministry, and I'm treating it as a ministry. And it's really about sharing what I've learned and helping others find hope. And so I have really said, you know, God, whatever you ask of me, I'm going to do it. Like, I'm just going to be brave. I'm just going to, whatever you tell me to do, whatever you tell me to say, I'm just going to try to do that. And I'm going to trust where this ends up. And so I kept feeling like I needed to, like, he wanted me to write a song. And I kept saying, I'm not a songwriter. Mm-hmm. That's no. I mean, and then I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to play it. I don't know how to sing it. And, you know, and I was reminded, you said that you would do whatever I asked you to do. And so every quiet time that I had, every day that I was in the shower, every time that I was cooking dinner, whatever, these words just kept coming to me. So I finally, I was just like, oh, I was at dinner alone. I was on a business trip and I was at dinner alone. And I was like, fine. I got my notebook out. I'm sitting there, I'm eating. The waitress is coming, you know, what do you want? Da, 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 da. And like, eventually she just knew to leave me alone. Like, I just tuned out and I was in this restaurant and I was sitting by myself and I just wrote this song out. And then it sat there in my notebook for a while. And I still don't know what's going to happen to it. But the next step is like, I felt the pressure, like, okay, well, you're going to forget how this goes if you don't, like, you know, record, like, sing it, like, record how this is supposed to go. And I was like, I really don't want to do that. At some point, I'm going to have to share it with someone. I know that's the next thing you're going to ask me to do is just to share it with someone. And they're going to hear me sing, and I'm not okay with that, really. Like, this is
not it.
But, you know, I did it, and I think that that's part of it, you know. And if you start, I don't remember if it's in the Bible or if it's just a parable, but it is in the Bible, about, you know, giving, when you're responsible for the little that he gives you, when you
mm-hmm.
use the gifts that you have, that he will trust you with more and you can do more.
Yeah.
When we talk about worship music, I will feel very guilty if I don't share this gem with you.
Okay.
Have you ever heard the song about that Jason Upton sings called Fly?
I have to look that up. I haven't heard that song.
Okay. So there's videos about this encounter as well, but it's incredible because Angel actually is recorded singing on the Audible with Jason Upton.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, it will give you chill bumps when you listen to it. And then someone who was part of the recording or the sound people or whatever was interviewed about what had happened. And so I'm not going to spoil it, but it's Google Jason Upton fly with sings with Angel. And it's incredibly powerful. And you're going to listen to it and you're going to be a little... I would say listen to the, find the interview with the sound guy first.
Okay.
Hear what he has to say about it. And then listen to the song. It is, it's incredible.
Oh yeah, I am totally, as soon as I'm done with this, I'm Googling all that. I gotta hear that. That is so cool.
It's very powerful.
Oh. April, thank you so much for this. This was great. I absolutely enjoyed talking to you. This was so fun.
Yes, no, thank you so much for having me and enduring me.
no, it was really cool. Before we started this interview, like, we found out we have, like, a couple people in common with her son being an amputee. He does adaptive sports, and I'm a rec therapist, so, like, we've probably been to the same events and not known that each other was there, so it was really cool to kind of find that out about you.
Yes, I'm excited to continue to stay connected, it's such a fun thing. Like, I know Tyler is getting to be a grown-up, and hopefully he'll be, you know, he's striving to make the next Paralympic Games, and he was able to compete in Ireland, and so he's internationally medaled in track and field, and it's really cool to watch them blossom into that. But I tell you what, there's nothing, I really enjoy watching my other boys play sports as well. I mean, there's nothing like being a mom on the sidelines, but there's just something about being part of the challenged athlete community. There's nothing like it. It's like a family. It's just so positive and so encouraging. And it really takes all of the definition that's around competition and every other aspect or venue, it's just completely changes it and turns it on its head for sure.
It definitely does. April, thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you.
Where can people find your book?
So my book is almost anywhere you can buy a book online. I have an Audible version, so that's on Amazon Audible. It's on Apple Audible Books, and then on Kindle, of course, and Goodreads, and Target.com, and Walmart.com, and all those places. And you can order it on Amazon. But if you go to thedrifteddrum.com, you can buy a signed copy from me there.
Oh, fun. Okay.
Yes. And also, that's where I also have a digital download companion journal. So if you're a member of like a small group or even just want to do some extra self-reflection, like you feel like you really need something to kind of jumpstart your healing, I have the companion journal goes chapter to chapter with the book. So okay. You can do some extra self-reflection and some journaling as you go, and has guided questions and extra stories. And then also that's where Tyler's Apparel line is, of course. And you can sign up for my newsletter.
Awesome. I'm going to put all that in the show notes too, so people can also find you there.
Oh, and I have a No Mess, No Message shirt on there, which happens to be kind of my favorite. Well, I can't say my shirts are more my favorite than Tyler's because, you know, come on, but I really do love my No Mess, No Message shirt. It references the verse Romans 8:18.
Oh,
and so
awesome.
You have to look that up. It just really, you know, highlights what No Mess, No Message is about. And I also have a shirt on there in the spirit of the, you know, certain situation we're in right now that says social distancing from everyone but Jesus.
I think I saw that shirt because I went on the set. I'm like, that's funny.
You know.
I love it.
It's funny but true.
Yeah. Thank you so much, April.
Thank you.
Guys, thanks so much for joining me for another episode of the Brave Podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed hanging out with April as much as I did. So I'm going to put all the info of how you can connect with her in the show notes. Be sure to check that out. The Drifted Drum Company, her book, No Mess, No Message. It's a great book. I loved reading it. I could relate to April so much while I was reading this book. And she was just so honest and raw. And I really appreciated that. So be sure to pick up her book. Check it out. I'll put that in the show notes. All right, next week's guest is my friend, Ray Medrano. So you can definitely tell that we've been friends for a while in this podcast interview. I almost forgot that I was actually doing an interview. I was just like talking with my friend. It was really fun. Ray talks about fear and his skydiving experience. So if you ever wanted to know what skydiving is like, this is a good one to tune into. Ray is awesome and just had such a fun time talking to him. His episode is on next week. All right, so here are my asks. So my first ask, of course, is to share the podcast with a friend. If you hear something in today's episode or any of the episodes that you think would help another person or that you really enjoyed, be sure to share that with a friend. Also, subscribe. If you want to know what is going on in the Brave Podcast world, get in on fun, free giveaways. I often do that. Be sure to subscribe on my email list. And how to do that is you're going to go on to www.apeachandcali.com, go to contact me, put your email in, you'll be on the email list, and you'll get all the information, including early access to the episode, which is super fun. All right, and then my final ask is ratings. Ratings is so fun for me to see that you guys are loving the show and letting me know what I need to work on. All right, I love you guys. I'm so appreciative of all of you who tune in and listen and share with my friends and your friends each week. I love you guys and love that you're on this journey with me. I'll see you next time and have a wonderful week. Bye.